Okay, great. Well, hello everyone. I am Maureen Clements. I'm the Associate Director for SUNY Library Services, and I'm really, really pleased today to be introducing Nancy Babb, who is the Discovery Services Librarian at University of Buffalo. She's going to be giving us a great presentation on Resource Recommender, and I want to see if you're able to share the screen there, Nancy.
Let's see. We'll share and make it a slideshow.
Great.
All right. I think we are set here. Okay. So thanks everybody for joining in today. I've given this presentation a couple of times now for Aluna Learns and at ENUG, but every time I talk about these, I learn something new from someone else. So SUNY, being the last in a series of presentation, actually will get the best and most updated information because I've learned a couple of new things. So, ooh, that's super exciting. Reaping the resources for recommenders, essentially it's that idea of how can we go out and all of the resources we want to include, how do we get them into our resource recommenders? And I've made my slides pretty detailed. There's a lot of slides with a lot of text on them, but my hope is not to read the text out to you or cleave to the slides today. Really, I wanted them to be useful as documentation after the fact. So I will hope to skip a lot of the slides, and if I do, don't think you're missing anything. And also, you don't need to be taking notes because they'll all be available. But if you wonder why I just breeze past something, that's probably why. So, why would I be interested in reaping resources? So, the resource recommender is that functionality that allows us to highlight local resources or really anything that we'd like at the top of Primo V search results or Primo search results, although the setup is a little different. And you set it up so that in response to whatever keywords, whatever tags you select, the user will be offered this highlight of your local resources. And that was something when we went over to Primo from our older systems, it was something that was new and different. So as we're looking at things that we might have lost as we make a migration and trying to figure out, well, how do we recreate things that we've done before? When you find something new and different, I think, oh, this is super exciting. Here's why we move over. And I think that a resource recommender is a great example of why we might want to go with a discovery tool. You know, like one of the benefits of it is that you can co-locate a lot of disparate resources and present them to your users in different meaningful ways. And for UB specifically, we maintain a huge number of local resources, primarily created by our subject specialist and liaison librarians. We have about 450 research guides at any given time on different topics, different subjects, and we have more than 600 active databases, all of which have help guides associated with them that were written by our colleagues. So at over 1,000 resources, 1,000 local resources that are designed to help the user in various ways, with recommendations for various things, it just seemed like it would be really a win-win to be able to integrate those into our discovery tool to give access to them. Great idea. But here's the problem, and here's our big challenge. The resource recommender, as it exists in Alma and Primo, isn't an automatically updated function. It's a flat file. So you enter the data into Alma, and then it's displayed in Primo, but it is that very flat process. And with that many resources that I'd like to harvest, and with the fact that they could be updated at any time, kind of constantly, things are added, things are taken out. New guides are being created and guides are being unpublished. To try and do that manually is just crazy. Like you could try to do it every day and have to look at it every day. And it's really way too much work for what it would be worth when essentially we want to offer this to our users, but it's not something that is necessarily going to give us the biggest bang for our buck. It's just going to be useful. So I went into this knowing if I couldn't at least semi-automate the process, make it more than just a manual one-on-one update of things, it just wouldn't be feasible for me to do that. So essentially, we're looking at the question of how do we get from all of these wonderful research guides and guides to our databases and everything to this resource recommender where the user will search for something like information science and right away get this offering that says, hey, you want, were you actually looking for critical information literacy? Here's some suggestions for you. Or did you maybe want to search in ERIC for some content there? All right. And knowing that that's not a functionality, that immediate update, that transferring of the data and getting it in place there and being able to serve it up there isn't innate to Alma and Primo. What can I do to automate the process, or can I at least find tools that would somehow automate the process for me? And I'm pleased to say that yes, indeed. And here's kind of the path that we would follow. Here's kind of the preview of what we'll be talking about today. So I will start with my source with is LibGuides. I'll use another tool, MarkEdit, to do some harvesting and some editing and exporting over to Excel, where I'll do a little bit more editing. But the important thing is that Alma can read the Excel file. And then once it's in Alma, that's how Primo displays it, right, from Alma. That's a lot of little steps. That's a pretty complex path with a lot of different pieces. But the happy thing is that on a regular basis, in terms of doing the maintenance, I don't do much more than use a really relatively simple but sophisticated text editor, which is Notepad++. So let's talk about the process. How do I get the data out of LibGuides? Well, LibGuides does make its data available for export in a couple of different fashions. Side note, I meant to say right at the beginning, you may not use LibGuides, right? So your research guides and everything may not be in LibGuides. So some of this may not be directly applicable. However, my hope is that if your circumstances and the tools you use are the same, hopefully this will be very helpful. But even if not, I'm hoping that some of the tools and some of the techniques might be helpful for other needs that you have. And if not, we can brainstorm and hopefully find solutions that would benefit each other all the way around. So having said that, let's look again at LibGuides. As I say, there's a couple of different ways that you can export data from LibGuides. You can export XML, but that is the full content of your guide. So everything that is described in the guide, all of the text that's there. And the guide HTML is basically that has to do with guides that have been deleted and that sort of thing. And those aren't really, I don't need all of that coming in. Like the picture I showed at first where right at the top of the Primo V search screen, we had that highlight of information, highlight of the guide that the user would want to search into. That's not the full content of the guide, and we're not indexing the full content of the guide, but I just want metadata, enough metadata to present it up to the user in a way that will be useful. And fortunately, that's the third way that the LibGuides metadata is available, or that the third way that the LibGuides data in general is available, but it happens to be metadata, which is through the OAI Open Archives Initiative Harvest. And they make it available in basically a Dublin Core format. So, and what you need to know there is really simple. LibGuides has it all set up telling you what you need to know. There's a base URL, and then there's three different sets that you can harvest from LibGuides. One is just guides. So that's your general research guides. One is A to Z, which is your A to Z database list or whatever you're using the A to Z list for. And the other is electronic reserve for courses, which we don't use. So can't tell you anything more about that. But the guides in A to Z, we do harvest. And so it's very simple when I want to harvest these, all I need to know is what's my base URL, what set do I want to get, and find a tool that will allow me to harvest those guides. And you also can list it. So if you're looking at your LibGuides and interested in what is available for harvest, you can just kind of do a list of the set. So I mentioned base URL, which is here to OAI-PHP, myresearch.lib.buffalo.edu. OAI-PHP is my base URL. The set I want is guides, my research guides. And then I can do a list of records to see what metadata is actually underneath there that is available for me to harvest. And you can see right here in the highlighted fields, this is essentially what exists underneath that would be available for me to harvest and potentially use to populate my research resource recommender, which is what I want to do. I've got the title of the guide. I have the creator of the guide, a subject that's been assigned to the guide, a description, which is not a required field, but is available if the guide owner puts it in place, publisher, which is essentially the institution, the date that the guide was created, and then the identifier is the URL for the guide itself. I know from looking at the resource recommender that this is all really good and useful data that should be very helpful in creating a research guide for me. Like I know, if someone searched for freedom of information, it'd be really helpful to get this guide up for them. So, as I said, just need to know your base URL and guides are A to Z, the name of your set, but the other caveat is that it's only published guides and unhidden entries available for harvest. Probably that's fine. Probably the only things that you would want to make available in your resource recommender or other place would be things that are published or unhidden, but just to make sure you know. And for us in particular, so as I said, we have a huge number of databases that we have many, many guides for. We make the A to Z listings visible, but the guides that are associated with the A to Z listing are actually private. So you link to them from that A to Z listing, but you're not discovering them as research guides. Hopefully that doesn't sound too confusing, but that's kind of why for databases, even though I have an underlying research guide, we call it a product description page. Although I have a guide for that, I harvest the A to Z entries instead. Okay, so harvesting the data from LibGuides. I know that I can get that beautiful metadata from LibGuides if I'm able to harvest through that protocol that's available. And so I went looking for a tool that would allow me to easily and basically for free harvest those records, that metadata. And happily, MarkEdit is a tool that has built into it the ability to harvest these records. MarkEdit is one of my favorite tools. Now, my background is in cataloging, so probably, I'm really fond of MarkEdit and other cataloging tools. However, I can reassure you, if you're not a cataloger, it's still a wonderful, wonderful tool. And if you're interested in working with that sort of like OAI, harvesting metadata, harvesting records, harvesting metadata records in general for any purpose, really, really, really helpful tool. And it has a number of functions built into it that are really helpful. So yes, harvesting the OAI records, we know we want to do that. We want to be able to get our metadata out of LibGuides. But it also has an editor that is like a really sophisticated text editor. So once we harvest those records, we can do a lot of editing of them. And then it also has export features. So I also can use it to put those records in a format that ultimately can be used by Alma. And it's very simple. The process to harvest the records through MarkEdit is really basic, really straightforward. So you go in and you find the OAI harvester tools. You have a choice between harvesting OAI records, which is what we're mainly going to focus on. And then there is a batch harvester, which we'll touch on really briefly at the end of the session. Really briefly, right now, we just want to focus on harvesting those OAI records. All you need to put in MarkEdit, put in your base URL, which is your server address in MarkEdit speak, the set name, as we've already talked about, the metadata type we know is Dublin Core because LibGuides tells us that it's the DC format, and the crosswalk path for that will be automatically supplied when you specify Dublin Core. That's all you need to do. You click your button and bada bing, there it goes. You've harvested your first set of records. Easy, straightforward. And once you've done it, it automatically opens up a file for you that is all of your records in a format that can be used and edited by MarkEdit. And there's just a couple of things I want to mention here relative to MarkEdit. So the first thing is that the files that are created for and that you work with in MarkEdit are MARC files, but they're not MRC files, which are the machine readable cataloging files that would be suitable for putting into a catalog, you know, for harvest, for putting into Alma or another type catalog that are indeed machine readable. MarkEdit uses an MRK file, which is a human readable, human editable version of the MARC file. So if you want, you can take that MRK file and save it as an MRC file, suitable for use as a MARC record. We don't care about that. We don't really need to do that. But the important thing is that it is an MRK file. It is a text-oriented file, so we can edit it. We can edit it in MARC. We can edit it in a text editor. We can do all of the things that we want. So just to let you know that MRK, that is a very wonderful human-readable MARC file. And the other thing I want to mention is that when I do this harvesting, typically I will save two copies of the file. Now we know it's always nice to have a backup copy, right? Because if anything goes awry, you can just go back to the original. So that's great. But the other reason I find it really important, really helpful to save a copy, an extra copy, when I do my export by harvest of the records, is that I can use that. I can save that as a kind of pristine copy and I can use it later. I can use it next month or whenever I want to do my next harvest as a simple way of checking for changes. So that's part of a semi-automated, not exactly automated, but it's a help. And here, when I have just done my harvest and I open up the record, you can see how it now compares. I've got all of the same information that we saw when we did the list records in LibGuides, when we looked at the underlying XML, the DC-oriented XML. Well, here that same data is in the MRK human-readable MARC record. And a couple of things have been added and a couple of things have been translated. So instead of the DC author or DC creator field, I now see a 100 field identified here, which is just the MARC tag for an author field. The 245 is the MARC tag for the title field. So all of these fields are going to be an exact replica or an exact map to what we took out of the LibGuide, just with the MARC coding on it. Do you need to know all the MARC coding? No, you don't. If you already know MARC coding, if you like MARC coding, obviously, it's easy then, you can kind of rely on it. But as I say, the important thing here is the fact that they're discrete fields that we'll be able to work with discrete text, because ultimately what we want to do is map this for the resource recommender. And it doesn't really matter to us whether or not it's MARC or another text field, what all of these things mean. For me, that's really helpful mnemonics because we know 100 is an author-oriented field. We know that 245 is a title-oriented field, and so on. But please don't be dismayed or discouraged if you buy the MARC tags. They're just there to as indicators. All right, and so we can see all of that data. And now I can really start to get a good idea that shows me how they have been mapped from LibGuide into MARC. And then now is when I can really start to see, aha, here's how they'll map over to a resource recommender. This is an example of the template for the library guide, which is a standard type of resource recommender. And I can already see that without even doing much additional work, I've got a lot of fields that can be populated automatically. So the name, which is a required field, the name of the resource that's required for the library guide resource recommender, I can take that from my Dublin Core title, which is MARC 245 field. The description I can take from the DC description 520 field. The tags, which are the keywords that the user would be searching for that would trigger the display of the guide, I can take those from the DC subject 690 field, all sorts of things like that. And the DC identifier field is actually the URL of the guide. So automatically that's going to be the link that I want to use. So already, like I say, we can see that's going to be a pretty straightforward map. And there really are just a handful of changes then that I want to make and a handful of things that are missing. So the one field that isn't automatically supplied is a key, which is the unique identifier for the resource recommender. What I do is because we use a friendly URL in our LibGuides, I can take that last part of the friendly URL, which is then a friendly file name, and I use that to create the key. So my key is going to be consistently matched with the library guide, and it's going to have a meaning that's going to be helpful for me to recommend it. Some other things that I'm going to do here is I'm just going to combine a few files for the description. I mentioned previously that the description is not a required field. So ultimately what I'm going to do is I'm going to like add some text and put in the creator. And that way, if there isn't a description supplied, I'm supplying a description that could also be used if there is a description, right? So I can have a short or a long description. And then in the tags, I'm going to add my title, the name, because I want that to be a match as well. All right, editing in Mark, just to know there are a lot of good text-based, field-based editing tools available in Mark Edit. A couple of things that I would mention. Number one is the fact that because it is a text-based editor, you really can go in and just edit the text if you want. On the other hand, if you are comfortable with Mark Edit or interested, you can edit it as you would any sort of Mark record, using all of the tools that are available in the field, in the program. But the really exciting part for me is not just the fact that you can edit, but that as you edit, you can create tasks. And of the tasks, you can create task lists. So once you decide changes you'd want to make, you'll probably want to make those same kind of changes in the future every time you harvest your guides. And so rather than having to go through and take the same steps every time, you're going to make tasks out of them. And then you're going to take all of those tasks and put them into a task list. And when you harvest a guide, you basically click a button and let it do the editing, and then it goes. That really is the semi-editing part that is super exciting for me. This is just an example of my task list here for my library guides. And to highlight a couple of things here, where we see, I'll lose my mouse. Here we go. We can see here, I'm going to build a new field, and my new field is the text University Libraries Research Guide by 100. So it's a University Libraries Research Guide by whatever the creator name is in there. I have another place where I'm copying my 245, I'm copying my title field to an additional 690 subject type field. I'm building a new field that's contained of the description. I'm taking the end of the file name to make my key, all of these sorts of things. But before we get too overwhelmed by all of that texty text and the true and the falses and everything, I just want to reassure you that in terms of making those tasks, building them, you don't have to do it in flat text like that. There are task field editors with an interface that includes many, many, many examples. And so this is a great way of creating your tasks. So in terms of building the new field where I mentioned I built this new field where I'm typing in University Libraries Research Guide by whatever the field is, there's a very explicit example there of how to build it. So it's quite easy to build your tasks. All right. After I run my task, you get a pop-up to tell you that it's all been run. And when I've run everything right along, now I can see how my record has been transformed. I went from what I harvested from the LibGuide, and that was a DC oriented, and now then it went into the Mark oriented field. It's still in Mark right now, but I've transformed it to provide the what would populate my resource recommender. So my key now has the value. It's going to be the 999 field that I created with just the friendly file name. That description is that combination of the description plus the statement of responsibility, essentially the description plus University Libraries Research Guide by the guide holder. I've added another occurrence for the 690 field, another tag, and so on. So just to mention, I think I already did mention, you can use Mark Edit, of course, to edit your Mark fields or to edit Mark records. If you wanted to, you could harvest all of your records from LibGuides and work with them in Mark Editor, save them as MRC machine readable Mark files and load them into Alma. I wouldn't recommend doing that because it's not necessary, but we do like getting the records into Primo, as well as having this resource recommender. But we use a discovery import profile. Just the point is there's an easier way of doing that if you want to get records from resource recommender into Primo search results instead. But why we would also use a resource recommender is for a couple of reasons. Number one, the resource recommenders stand out right at the top of the search results. So it does provide an alternative way for your users to get to that content and not find it all hidden within their search results. And we do find that our databases get many, many hits from the resource recommender. That's our most popular popular recommender. And we also can add tons of alternative search tags to them, which is something helpful. And I'll tell you why. So after it's been in MarkEdit, we're going to take it into Excel. Really, the only reason we're doing that is because Alma wants an Excel file. It can't import a Mark file. It can't import a text file. It needs to import an Excel file. And fortunately, MarkEdit has a export tab delimited record feature, which allows you to do that. So this is really terrific. Essentially, it's taking that MARC record that we have. It's taking all of those records. We're identifying the source, making it a text file. Tab is how it's delimited, meaning it's a tab between each one of your fields. And then the important thing to know for the resource recommender is your in-field delimiter is going to be a semicolon. The in-field delimiter is what's going to be used within any particular field if you have multiple occurrences, multiple values within that field. And the only field that we want to have multiple values is our 690, aka subject, aka tag field. It's what's going to be our tag field in the resource recommender. You can have as many tags within the resource recommender as you want until you get to a certain number of characters, I'm sure. And it is the one field that Alma allows to have multiple values in it. And you want multiple values because you want users to be able to serendipitously make match with your resources by many ways they might be searching, but you need to separate them by semicolon. So in this way, we have set that all up. The other thing you do here, so the first screen is where you say, here's where I want you to pull the data from and here's where I want you to put it. The second screen for exporting your tab delimited records is where you say, these are the only fields I want you to include. Now, could you include all of the fields? You could if you wanted to, but it's much easier, simpler, and cleaner to say, once you've made your edits, only give me these fields. These are the only ones I want. These are the only ones I care about. And you can see I have drawn out here. These are the fields that I showed mapped into our template for the resource recommender, my 999 subfield A field, which is my key, 245 subfield A field, which is my title slash name. And then I'm going to load the data. It will translate all of those. Once you've done that one time, you don't need to repeat this every time, just save it. You can save that as an export profile. And then anytime you want to run that, you just load the data from the file. So again, it's a way of kind of automating the process. You don't have to do the same thing every time. And then the next thing you do is you would just go into Excel, open Excel, and import your tab delimited file, your text file. So why would I import instead of just opening Excel, just trying to open the file directly in Excel? Because sometimes that works. And with Alma, sometimes it doesn't, depending on what your content is. You may have often found when you're like opening up the database, the exported Excel files from Alma, that you try to open up something and the MMS ID doesn't display correctly because Excel wants to treat it as a long integer or doesn't understand what it's doing. A way of kind of ensuring that you can work around that is to open Excel and then import the file, look at what's coming in, and if you need to make any changes to it, you can kind of transform it. You can change it to text instead of a number, that sort of thing. And the other thing, sorry, I didn't mention here, but I should, we also want to normalize our field data. It just saves some problems when we get some weird diacritics or anything like that. Typically, it will help. So we're here. We're ready for our resource recommender. This is exactly the data pretty much that I've took from LibGuides already all in these different fields ready to be put into my resource recommender. We have almost everything that we need. The primary thing that we need to change is, you can see here, we've got column one, 999A, column two, 245, subfield A. Those first two rows, we really don't want. We want to replace them with the values that ALMA needs to recognize for the resource recommender. And you can find out what those fields are either by looking at the documentation from Ex Libris, or something I frequently do and I think is really helpful, just export an existing resource recommender file from ALMA. And then you can see exactly how those files are being formulated, exactly how they're being named, exactly what the sequence is. So I think that's super helpful. Something I just started doing was using an Excel macro to adjust the columns and the field names. What I had been doing previously was just opening, you know, downloading a copy, a spreadsheet from a resource recommender, grabbing the heading from it, putting the heading into my new file, and then adding a column where I might need to. And it was not very time consuming, but then I thought, wow, if I'm talking about semi-automating things, can I look at semi-automating this? And why, yes, I can. And it works pretty easily. So this is an example. If you're interested in the Excel macro, you could look at it later. Just to mention to you, there are certain fields that will need to be present in the resource recommender for ALMA to read it. It's not every single field that's there. For example, the active field, which is just something that you say, yes or no, I want this particular entry in the resource recommender to be displayed. You don't actually have to have that in your import file. Same thing with the always display value and the views value. Those are things that will be automatically filled in by default if you don't have them. But some of the other fields you do need to add. So the key, the name, the tags, the description, and the URL, I've accounted for all of those, but URL text is a field that is required. We don't use it, but if you wanted to use different text, like instead of having the link, by default, the link will be on your name. And if you wanted to instead say, click here for the recommender or follow this link for the most wonderful thing you've ever seen, you can put URL text in there. And that works really nicely. Internal note is something that you do need to have, but it's only going to display to you. You have to have that particular column in your Excel spreadsheet to upload it and import it into ALMA, but you don't have to have content within it. So why do I like to do additional editing in Excel? So the terrible secret about resource recommender is that it's not smart. It's not smart searching at all. It doesn't have any of the niceties built into it that would allow you to make fuzzy matches, that would account for stasis, that would account for punctuation, all sorts of different things. It's really dumb, straightforward matching. It's only going to match anything that you put in as a tag. And that can be kind of annoying because, for example, for Hein Online, I need to put both Hein Online, Hein Online, and maybe even quote Hein Online, end quote. Because if I think a user might search under any one of those things, I need to enter those specifically as tags. For me, I find it a lot easier to kind of copy and paste and do multiple edits, you know, add a lot of duplicate tags this way in Excel, but you might find it easier to do it in MarkEdit, or you might find it easier to do it in whatever text editor of your choice. But anyways, when you're doing a lot of power adding and pasting and everything that way, this seems pretty easy. Okay, so the drawback is it's not smart. But the positive thing about that is we do have the ability to account for any kind of crazy ways or not so crazy ways that our users might be searching for things that otherwise, say with a catalog record, we really can't do. We really don't have the ability to do. An example of that is JSTOR. JSTOR, J-S-T-O-R, yes. But we find very often our users will search for J-S-T-O-R-E. And that's sensible, right? Like if someone just says to you, oh, I think you should search JSTOR, which I think often happens in classes, you are not dumb if you say, well, that must be JSTOR with an E. But typically, traditionally, I think if a user goes and searches JSTOR with that E, they're not going to get any results. So this is where we can account for any kind of popular names, alternative spellings, different things of that nature. And you can use your zero search results, Primo analytics reports, to see, are there ways that users are searching where they're not finding any results? And you can then account for that with your resource recommender. And we do that all the time and very often. Okay, we're now ready to upload our file. First things first, download a copy. Because if you import it and you overlay all of your data in Alma, it's so painful if you then have to do it again because something is wrong. Is it terrible? It's not the worst thing in the world. It's not like trying to redo your whole catalog, but save a copy and it will save your time in case it's needed. When you go into resource recommender, you want to do your resource recommender. It's configure, discovery, and then resource recommender configuration. You have the option then to add a resource, which is just like type in a single resource into the template. That works fine. But you also have the option to import. And that's what we're going to do here. We're going to import an Excel, our Excel spreadsheet. And we have the option to just add resources. So if maybe I'm just doing an update and I have one or two that I want, I'm just going to add them and everything will be there. The alternative is to replace all your resources. So if you're doing a full, I want everything cleaned up and start from fresh, that's where you're going to replace your resources. And then you make sure that you save. You'll get an error if there's any problems. The most common error I get or used to get was if I had I was missing a column, I'd forgotten, oh yeah, I need an internal note even though I don't use it, that sort of thing. And then you can, once you've got it saved in Alma, you can test your display and functionality in Primo. Yay, perfect, it's working, it's so wonderful. So we have arrived, yay, we have moved from LibGuides to MarkEdit to Alma to Resource Recommender. Yay, so great. However, is that a lot of work? Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of steps. It's a lot of stages. However, once you have it set up once, you've figured out what kind of tasks you want to set up, how you would like things to be done completely. You've determined all your wonderful, beautiful tags that you want to add to take care of your users. You don't have to redo that every time you want to make changes. You can just do a little bit of work to search for what has changed and then only focus on things that you've changed. And the tool that I like to use that for, you may be able to recommend another one, is Notepad++, which is a free, and I should say MarkEdit also is free. It's a free text editor, text and code editor that is has a lot of shortcuts, plugins, and helpful features. The only thing bad about Notepad++ is that it doesn't have a Mac version. So folks in different sessions and colleagues here on campus have given me a couple of suggestions for things that might be helpful for Mac users. I would use a program called Compare that allows you to open two text files and just highlight the differences between them. And I have a little note here that, yay, as of this fall, as of very recently, there's a new version of Compare that is Compare Plus, and I will talk about the difference there. So just to kind of go through my process, typically what I'll do, I've done my last harvest. I've saved my backup copy of the initial file. I'm just going to download a whole new harvest, and then I'm just going to use Notepad++ to compare. And I want to highlight any place has been a change in the record. So for example, I might just run a report on it. Using MarkEdit, I can just report on the names, the file names or that sort of thing, and look for just those differences. If I want to be really fast, I don't want to look at, oh, I want to be making changes. I just want to know if anything has been deleted or added, that's a way. Because my old file, if there's anything that exists in my old file that's not in the new one, that's probably something that's been unpublished that I'm going to want to delete. And by the same path, if there's something in the new file that's not in the old, that's something that's been added that I'm going to want to add. I will say though, because those MRK files, those human readable MARC files, are text-based, you can actually open those MRK files in Notepad++ and run your compare on them. And that's where the differences in all of the metadata in the file will be highlighted. So in my example, you can see that with this particular guide, which is communicative disorders, the name of the creator has changed and a description has been added. And this is a case where I'm probably not going to want to do a whole another complete update of everything, but I can just go in and manually make that update to in Alma for those sorts of simple changes. But I did want to show you here with Compare Plus as opposed to Compare, and those are two plugins that you can, you know, just add to your Notepad++. It will highlight only, it allows you to say only show me the things that have changed. So that's the difference between you open the two files and you roll, browse to see what the changes are between them, and just having those highlights updated. So summary. Initial setup, we use MarkEdit to harvest the desired set of records from libguides, edit them in MarkEdit in Excel, upload and import to Alma and test the results in Primo. And for maintenance, yes, I'm still doing that harvesting, but I'm using tools like Notepad++ to see what those changes are to really, really save my time. I do want to note that there are some additional options for automating. I don't want to go too deeply into this, partly because it gets more complicated, and also because I have not found this to be a task that's super, super helpful for me. But just so that you know, built into MarkEdit is the ability to create batch jobs and schedule them, say, using the task scheduler. I've included some detailed kind of walkthrough of that process, but the instructions that Terry Reese, who is the creator of MarkEdit, has are probably far superior to mine. And if you're interested in doing this, that would probably work very well for you. So just to highlight just a couple of things, this is where we have, instead of harvesting OAI records, we're going to set up a batch harvester. Essentially, this was, I think, initially created so that you could harvest from multiple sources at the same time, but you can also use it to save a job so that essentially you say, hey, here's where I want to harvest from, just click the batch edit job, and then it will run it. The drawback that I have to that, and the reason that I don't, there's all the steps for how to do it. The reason that I don't do it for the libguides harvest is that it's an incremental harvester, which sounds great because it should only harvest records that have changed, right? That's perfect. That's exactly what we want, except it isn't, because with libguides, it's going to note as changed anything that's had a change anywhere in the record. And for the most part, I don't care about, or sorry, not anywhere in the record, anywhere within the guide. And for the most part, I don't care about what's changed in the guide. I mean, I'm sure it's beautiful and it's awesome, but all that matters to me is the metadata. So if there's a guide that has been greatly enhanced, there's lots of images that have been added to it, titles have been added to it, mistakes have been corrected, all of those things, that's all beautiful. But if the metadata hasn't changed, I don't need to know about it. And if I'm doing an incremental harvest that is telling me, okay, here's all the guides that have changed, it's much, much harder for me to then look at my older files with this selected part of the new file and say, well, what are the things where the metadata has changed and the things where the metadata hasn't changed, so I don't need to worry about them. So for me personally, with the research guides, it's much simpler just to look at everything as opposed to doing an incremental harvest. Now, if I were doing really focusing on just my A to Z entries, the A to Z entries are more straightforwardly metadata oriented. So there's a bigger possibility that a change to an A to Z entry is going to actually impact the metadata than a change to the guide would. So your mileage may vary, and you may find this a really helpful process too, because if you do it, you can just set it up either to, you could run your harvest on whatever regular basis you want to and just bring in the files that have changed so that you'll know, okay, these are the things that I want to make changes in, or you can schedule it and, Terry has written into this using like the Windows task scheduler, setting it up so that you can run it on a daily basis, a weekly basis, any amount of time that you'd like. Again, I don't find that particularly helpful because of the differences with libguides, but it's available and it may work really, really well for your purposes. So it's worth checking out. And that's everything that I have for today, but I'd love to hear what tools and techniques you found useful or what you would recommend, all of those sorts of things, or especially if you have questions too, as long as we're here and we're talking together.
So Nancy, I just want to mention, I think that was a great presentation. Thank you so much. Extremely thorough. And it was really, really well done. And,
thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, I just was really
good.
Really even sure what the resource recommender was. So I'm glad. So thankful. Yeah.
I like it a lot. There are some drawbacks to it, but I do really like the fact that it gives us an easy way to highlight resources that our colleagues have made. So it also gives those who are working on the front lines, as it were, you know, who research librarians, reference librarians and everything, it gives them a lot of ability to say, here, would you add this? I want to add this. This is something I want to make known to our users. And something brand new that they've just introduced is the ability to have a persistent resource recommender. So for regardless of what a user types in, it doesn't have to match a tag. It will always display with the results. And I know that recently Heidi had used it. Heidi from Upstate Medical had used it to promote, I think it was JSTOR toward the beginning of the semester. And we have added that right now because we've just subscribed to New York Times Academic Pass, and we have a similar setup for Wall Street Journal. And we want to make sure as much as possible that our users are aware, hey, you have access to these resources. So that's pretty cool. And remember, we have a base camp where we all can discuss things either in the general SUNY base camp or there is a discovery base camp. So please join us, tell your friends, lots of experts there who give me a lot of good advice.
So Nancy, there actually is a question here that just came up in the chat. And is there a way to automate harvesting collections and sub-collections in Primo?
For the collections and sub-collections, you're talking about the digital collections? Yeah, I think you can use a digital import profile for that. So it wouldn't be a harvesting in this way, but it would be an import profile. The collections you've created manually. Carol, which collections do you mean? Thanks. Okay, yeah. So for collection discovery is the digital collections feature in Alma, not to be confused with Alma Digital. And I know you can create an import profile to populate those collections. I experimented with it on something, but we had too many records and it didn't really work out a lot. I think there's an FAQ for it, but I'll look into it and then we can maybe share that. Oh, thank you, Jill. And so that one with the LibAnswers, does that have both the digital and the discovery import profile? Yeah. Excellent. So yes, the digital import profile, that's the one that can be used to populate the collection discovery feature. And then I had mentioned a discovery import profile. We use that to harvest our LibGuides, our A to Z list. We also do digital commons that way. That one doesn't give you records in Alma. It only gives you records in Primo. But the benefit of it is that it's automatically updated. So, and so is the digital one. Sorry, you can set up but just as a benefit over the resource recommender with the digital import profile is that it's automatically updated, but it's integrated with the search results. So. Now they have said for the collection development, something that was approved for NERS this year, so hopefully we'll see it by the end of 2023, was the ability to create a set, to create a collection from a set based on a search, a logical search, and to keep it a logical search in your collection so that if you're using Alma records to create your collection based on a search criteria, you should be able to automatically somehow update your collection that way, which would be super because then you could do a book list like what's new in our collection without having to go in and delete and change it all the time. So we'll see how that works out. Yeah, isn't it cool? I'll be super happy if we can get that.
And if we did, maybe we could have you back to do another demo. Great. Any other questions? Great. Michelle just posted the link to join the Discovery Interest Group for people who might not be aware of it. So,
hey, do come join us if you're not there already. It is great. I want to learn from you. I want your secrets.
All right, I'm going to stop the recording.